We continue the shiur in Gemara. The Gemara says there were two great Tanoim, Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yonah's son, who were traveling along together. These two great Tanoim came to a division of the pathways. There were two roads, and they were confronted with a problem because they had to go, they had to reach a destination. And they had to select between these two roads. One of these two roads led past a non-Jewish place of worship, which of course is forbidden to pass by too closely. There is an absolute din that you're not supposed to get too close to it, to this place. You have to pass by, walk at a distance. Stay away from the door, the opening of this place of idolatry. Second road passed by the door of a house of illicit women, zinis. Question was, which of the two evils is worse? They had to go past one of the two. Either past Avodah Zarah, place of idol worship, or past the house of prostitution. So they discussed this question. One of them said, let us better go past the house of idolatry because there is no Yetzer Hara, there is no evil desire for it, so we cannot get trapped into doing something wrong. Whereas going past the other place, we might be ensnared by the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. Why take that risk? Second rabbi said no. And he went out. He said, on the contrary, let's go past the house of Zinis and let's accept the challenge of the Yetzer Hara. Let's go into battle against the Yetzer Hara and let's defeat him. Going past without looking, keeping our eyes closed, without having to have any contact of any kind, sight, hearing, action with this Yetzer Hara. The Gemara says that they went past this house of Zinis, the women sitting outside, and the women saw them, saw these two tzaddikim go past. The women fled. They ran inside and closed the door. Such extent, such an effect they had over these women. Of course, the first rabbi asked the second, how did you know this was going to happen? And he said, very simple. When we went past, we were discussing words of Teda. The Teda has a power to protect a person against all evil. The greatest evil out is the Yetzer Hara, is the evil desire, the Taiva. The worst Taiva is Chila B'nis. The fact that we were discussing words of Teda, this immunized us, it protected us against them. The fact that drove these women away from us. There are two items that we must learn as far as we are concerned. We are not these two rabbis. We are nowhere near the level of tzaddikim that they were, but we do have two important lessons. One, Tesis says that we know, we see from here very clearly, that it is forbidden for a person to pass by a place of idol worship, which means today, all these places where the goyim worship, that is idol worship. What they are worshiping is an idol. There's no one can be more dead than the one that they are worshiping. It's very, very dead because the Gemara says that how do you call a person dead after he dies? What is death after death? Death after death is Gehenna. We say a person dies, mis yumos, he dies twice, that means he dies physically, and then the second death is when he enters into Gehenna, where that is considered death for the soul. Now, there's no one more dead than this one they're worshiping. So therefore, that is considered idol worship. And we see that a person must stay away from or keep his distance, not to pass by too closely to these places of vital worship. If he's ever forced to go by, then he should try to go at a distance from the entrance, not to get too close to it, as far as possible. And then too, of course, to go by very quickly. And then at Yisrael, it's interesting to note, when they have a funeral at the Hadazesim, Mount of Olives, they carry the body to the Mount of Olives. Then when they have to pass by one of those places of idol worship, the ones carrying the body, the rest actually go on a fast trot. Instead of walking with the body, they actually run. Those who have been there, witnessed this, have seen this. That's because of this halacha, to run past, to get quickly past this place. Because it is so tumey, there is such a high degree of tumah in this place of idol worship. Secondly, the second item that pertains to us is the fact that it is true that a person who studies Torah is protected to a degree from this evil taiva, this desire, against the desire of chilabis. He has this protection to a limited amount, because nowadays a person or persons do not study Torah with that purity of thought, purity of soul, and therefore it is possible even in the study of Torah too, chas v'shalom, a person should be nichshal, a person should be trapped. So certainly, no question about it, that no one today can do what these two rabbis did. If a person today is confronted with this dilemma, they have to make the choice, there is no question about it at all, that he cannot make the decision that they did. The person is not permitted to risk a nisayon, a test, when it comes to chilabnis. Person is not allowed to take the risk of becoming entrapped, losing himself, becoming victim to this desire. He must do everything in his power to stay away from the slightest degree of test, never to venture forth. We find the case of David HaMelech, who said, "Bechonini no v'naseini, Hashem, test me in this." The Gemara says that he failed the test. He was captivated, the case of Bathsheba. Naturally, we know that in his case, it wasn't really a test. He didn't really fail because he had no Yitzhahara left. He had destroyed the Yitzhahara. But the results shown there, allegedly, that he had failed this test, are written only to teach us that no person should ever dare to risk undergoing a test like that. And that is why every single day we daven to Hashem, Al Tevienu L'Ineini Soyun, spare us, rescue us from a test. Abinazal said, very ironically, Abinazal said, when we say this tefillah every day, we say Al Tevienu L'Ineini Soyun V'L'Ineini Soyun, Hashem, spare me, save me from a test of this desire, this taiva, and save me from embarrassment. Meinel said, because one of the two, either pass the test or there is embarrassment. Either stay away from the test or there will be embarrassment, shame. The person ends up in shame if he gets trapped by this taiva, chas v'shalom. Therefore, a person should avoid this test at all costs. In case he's faced with this dilemma, he should not be faced with it, of course. Try to avoid both. But if, last resort, he's got to choose between the two, then certainly stay away from any kind of temptation whatsoever. No matter what the degree of temptation is, stay away from it. Do not challenge the Yetzirah ever. Yizechet to have him not challenge you. And above all, too, to try to learn Torah with the purest of thoughts, because there is nothing that can protect a person throughout spiritually as much as the study of Torah. The Gemara says we go on out to the stories of the 10 rabbis, Asara Haruge Malchus, 10 rabbis who were put to death, each one a different form of torture. We won't go through every one of them, but the Gemara says we'll take one specific case now. Case of Rabbi Hanina ben Tranya, one of the greatest tzaddikim in his era, one of those 10 rabbis. Each one of the 10 died in a different manner, all, as we explained previously, by the Roman king, who said that these 10 were going to die in place of the brothers who had sold Yosef HaTzadik as a slave. Gemara says that there were two rabbis who were captured by the Romans, Rabbi Eliezer ben Parto and Rabbi Hanina ben Tranya. These two were taken in captivity. They were placed in prison, in a dungeon, to await trial. And then, while in this dungeon, Rabbi Eliezer ben Parto said to Rabbi Hanina ben Tranya, "You are very fortunate because you are being charged with only one crime by these Romans. I have 5 claims against me. What chance do I have to come out, to be freed, to be saved?" Because here there's a question of a death penalty involved. Bichlina ben Tanya replied, "Fortunate are you that you are being charged with 5 crimes, but you are going to be saved. You will be found innocent of all 5, and woe is to me that I am charged for 1, and I cannot evade that one charge. I'm going to be found guilty of that one charge, which will result in my being sentenced to death." Now, why is it fated that I, on one charge, will be sentenced to death, and you will be freed, even though there are 5 charges against you? This should require a miracle to free you. The answer is that I have a zechus. The merit that I have is that I spent my life in the study of Torah. It's a very great mitzvah, a major mitzvah, but it's not enough to save my life. You have spent your life dedicating yourself to the study of Torah and Gemilas Chasadim, doing good deeds, charitable deeds for the sake of other people. Therefore, because you have the combination of both Torah and Gemilas Chasadim, therefore your life will be spared. Because the Gemara says that the person who studies Torah alone, even though he studies Torah in purity, but does not couple this with action, gemilas chasadim, with kindness to others, that person resembles one who does not have Hashem over him. He actually lacks Hashem, meaning he lacks true faith in Hashem, even though he studies Torah, but does not add to this the mitzvah gemilas chasadim. He does not have the complete faith. What is the reason for that? Because the very beginning of the Torah says, Bereishis teaches us, Bereishis, the Beis means because of, Bishvil. Bereishis, Bishvil, Reishis, because of Reishis. Reishis is Reishis Chachma, which means the Torah. Do you know why Hashem created the heavens and the earth? Because of the Torah. Bora Alekim, Es HaShemayim Es HaRetz. Hashem created heaven and earth. So, therefore, that is the importance of Torah. A person must devote his time to the study of Torah, because this is the reason for creation. At the same time, a person must know that he must do favors, kindnesses to his fellow Jew, his fellow man. And that's why the first words of the Torah, the last letters, constitute the word emes. Bereishis bara Elokim. Last letters make up the word emes, which means Hashem says, "I am Hashem of emes, of truth," which means that I am trustworthy. Believe in me, that I will reward you. I will pay you back. One who does not have faith is afraid to spend his money or time on others, helping others, because he says, I need that money for myself. I have limited funds. I want to spend my time in studying Torah rather than going to business, so I cannot afford to give of my money to others. This means that he does not believe fully in the emes of Hashem. What is the truth of Hashem? Ani Hashem ne'emon l'shalem. I am trustworthy that I will pay back. I will repay you any good deeds that you do. If ever you give to tzedakah, to charity, it will not come from your pocket. I'll repay you and manyfold. Here a person, though he did it because he wanted to study Torah, but he was afraid to give of his money to others because he might not have enough for himself, that person did not have complete faith. Rabbi Mataya said, now, because I spent my time in the study of Torah, you also added to Gemilas HaSadah, therefore your life will be saved, and mine will not. I have forfeited my life. The Gemara asks, how can you say, how can he claim that he did not do Gemilas HaSadah? Chlidim and Tanayin, the Gemara says, was the Gabbai of Tzedakah. He was the collector of Tzedakah among the Jews at that time. There's no bigger mitzvah than going out to collect money. The one, the treasurer, the one that collected Tzedakah, the one that doled it out. He was the one that meted out provisions for the poor. What's better than that? The Gemara says, true. Not only that, but the Gemara says, if you want to know how to appoint a gabbai for tzedakah, a treasurer, want to handle the whole item of tzedakah, collections and distribution of tzedakah, then you should appoint only one who is as honest and as perfect as Rabbi Chanina ben Tranyan. What can you ask for more than that? The Gemara answers, true. In honesty, he was outstanding. He was the best one for that position. But in action, he was lacking. True, he did go out of his way to collect, to distribute, but he did not himself give tzedakah chesed as he should have. So the Gemara says, is that so? We have a discussion between Pliny ben Tzadion and his Rebbe, Yossi ben Kisma, where he said that he had fulfilled the mitzvah of chesed, and this was admired by his Rebbe to the greatest extent, because he said one time, as gabbai of tzedakah, I hold the monies of tzedakah. And one time, by accident, my own personal funds became mixed together with the money of tzedakah, and I took the whole money and gave it out to tzedakah. I didn't want to take a chance. So I took my money and tzedakah's money and put it together, and I gave it all to tzedakah. And as Rebbe said, if you did that, I wish I could be in your position. So great a mitzvah. So how can you say he did not do Gemilas HaSadah? Look at his record. Gemara answers, true, he did. He did collect tzedakah, he did distribute tzedakah, he did give out. He showed a sign of chesed to a great degree. But for the level of tzaddik, his level of tzaddik, he was so high a degree of tzaddik, according to a person's level, that's how he is supposed to perform mitzvahs. If a regular person would have done tzedakah and chesed like he did, that regular person would be very much admired and commended. But for his level of tzaddik, he should have done more. Therefore, he is not considered, he's not recorded as having really performed the mitzvah of Gemilas HaSadah the way he should have. That's why he himself acknowledged that and said, it is my lot to be found guilty. I know I'm going to die for my one single charge. The Gemara says, now the trials came up. And the first one to be put on trial was Rabbi Eliezer ben Parta. He came to trial, the judge there, this of course was the Roman court, the evil Roman court. The judge said, you are charged with five crimes. You must explain these five, every one of the five. If you fail to do so, you die. We'll give you the five claims. One, how come that you studied Torah? Why did you study Torah? Two, why did you steal? You are charged with the study of Torah. You are charged with the crime of stealing. Stealing means robbing, going out and robbing by force, mugging, robbing. Abelezer answered, these two I will answer in one sentence, in one statement. There are two items. There is the sword and the book, two opposites. If one is a master of the sword, he is not a master of the book, of study. If one is a master of study, he is not a master of the sword. Therefore, it is impossible for me to have committed both acts, both study and rob. That's impossible. And therefore, since one of the two is a lie, is a false charge, then I ask that you consider the other one a false charge also. If one has been disproven, I cannot be charged with the other, because one of those two is false. Whichever one you want, that's the one that's false. This defense was accepted. Now, of course, point is, we have to understand, it was accepted because it was accepted in this vein. It was understood in this manner by the judge, this defense. Actually, Lazar and Parta would really not deny the fact that he studied Torah. He would not go into a false statement. What he did say was something that can be taken two ways. And of course it was taken the wrong way, or for his benefit, the right way. The question was, you study Torah and you steal. Lazar and Parta answered, hinted at this point, which they did not catch. The Midrash says that Hashem sent down to earth two items. Hashem sent down a sword wrapped in pages of Torah. A sword, a fiery sword enveloped in pages of Torah. Hashem sent this message to earth. If you fail to obey what is written in these pages of Torah, you will die by the sword. If you obey what is written there, you'll be saved, your life will be spared from the sword. This was the message sent by Hashem. And now, Lazar and Parta said to the judge, if the book, then there cannot be the sword. If the sword, there cannot be the book. In this case, if I was guilty of not obeying what is written in the Sefer, the Torah, I'd be afraid of your sword. But the fact is, I'm not guilty of that. I am not afraid because I did obey everything written in the Sefer Torah, therefore I need not fear the sword. Those go together. But of course, this was misunderstood by the judge. It was taken by the judge to mean that he was not guilty of either one. He had not studied Torah, therefore these two claims were erased. These two charges were now wiped out. Third claim, he said to the Muslim Parta, how come that they call you rabbi? So he said, well, there are different kinds of rabbis. The word Rebbe means teacher. Rebbe means a learned one, a master. A master is a Rebbe. You have the Odin, the Eved, Rebbe, the slave has a Rebbe, his master. A master or teacher, because I am a master of a trade. My trade is weaving. I know how to weave cloth, and therefore they call me Rebbe. I'm a Rebbe of Tarsiyim. Tarsiyim means weavers. Again, the word Tarsiyim, spelled differently with a tav, means Talmidei Chachamim. This again was misunderstood by Bali Tresen. Misunderstood by the judge, the master of weavers, not a rabbi, fine. We accept it. But, here came the very difficult part. He said, but, we'll accept it, but you must prove it. We want you to prove your knowledge in weaving. What did the Lazar Parta know about weaving? What does any man know about weaving? Not one who studies Torah. That's a woman's job. So he said, you're going to prove to us how much you know, what an expert you are in weaving. So the judge had brought before him two threads. This is a very, very delicate item, as we'll see. Anything that is woven has two kinds of threads. You're all experts in this. You know that there is the warp and the woof. In Hebrew is the shasi and anev, which means the threads that go in the lathe. The lathe, the weaving machine, first weaves threads in the lathe, and then over it, the machine then weaves through it the threads in the width. The lathe is called the warp. The width is called the woof. This, of course, you're all aware of. It's speaking English now. Doesn't sound like it. Now, there are different kinds of threads, though, that are used for these two. So the judge brought these two threads, had these two threads brought before the lesser part, and said to him, tell me, which is the warp, the long thread, length thread, and which is the woof, the odev, the thread that goes in the width on top of it. He looked at the threads. Then a miracle occurred, and two flies landed on these threads. A female fly landed on the chassis, and a male fly landed on the odev. Female, the male, of course, is always the master, always on top. So he realized that where the male fly was, that would be the woof, the thread that goes in the width on top of the bottom thread. This would be the top thread. Female fly landed on the bottom thread. So he said readily, this thread is the chassis, where the female fly was. This thread is the anev. And of course he was right. This was a miracle. Now this miracle is a little difficult to understand. Tesvus asks a very simple question. We could appreciate the miracle that these two flies landed on these two threads, but there's a second miracle necessary. Can anybody tell us how, at a moment's notice, in a fraction of a second, you can tell the difference between a male fly and a female fly? How was it possible to tell immediately this fly was male, this one was female, when they're both on two different threads? Therefore, Tesis in fact disputes this point. Asher Kodesh says that the miracle was these two were male and female flies, which taught, represented the male and female type of thread. Tesis says that there are two kinds of flies, two different kinds of flies altogether. One is known with a male name, and one is given a female name. They can be recognized easily because they are different shape, different color, so there was no problem here in recognizing. Of course, you still have to know these different kinds of flies, different insects. And this, literally, this much, what you can see from a distance, this kind of knowledge the Elizabeth and Parta had, because all types of wisdom was known to these great rabbis. But this way, Tesvus is much easier to understand how he's able to detect immediately which one of the flies represented the male, which one represented the female. Now, this was the third question which he had successfully evaded. The fourth question was, I asked Blessed Aparta, how come that we had a meeting, all people were asked to come to an assembly for discussions about the Roman idolatry, you were missing. You did not attend that meeting, which proves there's something wrong with your loyalty to the Romans. He replied, I am very loyal to the Romans, of course. I wish them well. But the reason I didn't go is because I'm an old man and I'm not agile. There is so large a crowd, the pressure is so great, it's like the subways. I was afraid I'd be crushed. They'd step on me, I'd be crushed. So they said to him, "Is that so? We have meetings regularly. Has anybody ever been crushed?" Again, a miracle happened at that moment. An old man was crushed in that meeting. Report came that there was a fatality, a death. He looked at them blandly and said, "I guess I was right. Could have been me." So they said, "Right. We'll justify your actions." Finally, they asked him, "How come that you freed your slave? You have a slave, and according to Jewish law, of course, Hebrew law, it's even there, it's forbidden to free one's slave. If one does so, sometimes the situation calls for it. I mean, Leo, for example, had a slave. He needed a tenth person for a minyan. And when a slave is freed, he automatically becomes, it's as though he converts, becomes a ger. Now the Romans did not want the Jews to free their slaves because they did not want to increase, to multiply the number of mitzvahs in the world done by Jews. They were wary of that. They had heard that Lazarus Parta had freed his slave. And of course, by the way, we note that according to the laws of the Torah, there are laws of slaves, readily so. Not only that, but if we could charge one of the past leaders of the Husa with a crime for freeing the slaves, Titus says the Eilom Behem Ta'avaydim. It's a crime to free slaves. In any event, we can understand reasons for it with all due logic. The claim, the fifth charge against Lazarus Parta was, "Why did you free your slave?" So he said to them, "I did not free him." This time he had no defense. He said, "The charge is a lie. Do you have any witnesses to back it up?" One of the men there got up and ready to testify. If he had testified, it would have been all over with, finished. So present at that meeting, at this court, was Eliyahu HaNavi, who was always ready, prepared to help out those that are close to Hashem. Tzaddikim merit miracles. So he spoke to this man who was present there. The HaNavi was there in the guise of a Roman official, a high official. He said to this man, "Leave him alone. Don't testify against him, because you see, look at the miracles that happened before until now. You know they were miracles. So there'll be a miracle here too, and you will be embarrassed if you testify. Therefore, abstain, let him go, and that's it." This man was so evil that despite the request by Eliyahu HaNavi him to desist from testifying, he said, "I'm going to testify anyhow." This called for sterner measures by Eliyahu HaNavi. This man had been given a note to deliver to the top cabinet of the Romans. So Eliyahu HaNavi took this note, pulled it away from this man, and he tossed it. A note is lightweight. You know that it's much easier to throw something heavyweight than something which is lightweight. But we see the arm of Eliyahu HaNavi. He pitched this note for a distance of 1,600 miles. How much would they pay for it? What kind of a contract? And of course, this meant that this man was going to wend his merry way for the rest of his life looking for that note. And this was a fate he well deserved. This was how Rabbi Elazar ben Parto's life was saved, just as predicted by Rabbi Chanina ben Tradyan. Now the time came for Chanina ben Tradyan to be placed on trial. He came before the court, and they said to him, "We have one claim against you, one question. Of course, if you answer these questions satisfactorily, you're free. I have one question to ask you. Why did you study Torah? There was nothing he could say to defend himself, because he had been caught with a Sefer Torah in his arms. There was no way he could deny it. He was brought to trial with the Sefer Torah as evidence. So his answer was, why did I study Torah? Because Hashem, my Hashem, commanded me to. That's the reason why I study Torah. So they said, that's an arrogant answer. Therefore, we're going to show you, make a lesson of you. We're going to punish you and your wife and your daughter. Miriam and Tanya will be punished with death by burning at the stake, to wrap the Sefer Torah around him in his arms, tie it tightly to himself, and to set fire to him and the Sefer Torah together. For his wife, they decreed death by sword, and for his daughter, to be placed permanently into a house of prostitution, serve the Roman soldiers. The Gemara says these are very severe penalties, and this had to be decided on from heaven. Nothing happens on earth without heaven deciding it. The evil ones on earth are only messengers to carry it out. Why did the Chinam and Tanya deserve so severe a penalty? Something had been done. The Gemara says because he had expressed, he had spoken out the name of Hashem, which cannot be pronounced. This does not mean necessarily that name which we know is never pronounced, the name which instead is pronounced differently. This is one of the names that Rashi called, this is the Shem Mem Beis, the letters of one of the names of Hashem, which are secret. These letters are secret, which should not be pronounced, which he did. The Gemara asks, if he did, he was so great at tzaddik, how come he did it? The Gemara answers, because, and especially since the Gemara says that a person who does that, in fact, loses his Olam Haba, his Gan Eden. The Gemara says that it is permissible to do this for the sake of learning. When you're studying Kabbalah, you may pronounce these words. Again, this is not the name. But you remember that clearly. It's not the word which is never pronounced. Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is never pronounced, ever. Instead, we have a different pronunciation for it. This is a different name of Hashem. And many Shemus HaKadoshim, many holy names of Hashem, this deals with one of them. It's a longer name. So the Gemara says it is permissible to learn it, but not to use it. In this case, he did not use it. So why was he punished? The answer is because it is permissible to learn it privately. He had pronounced it publicly before his students. This was wrong. And of course, it wasn't that wrong. Regular person would not be punished, but he was so big a tzaddik that Hashem is so particular. The actions of a great tzaddik, that the smallest infraction is given the severest penalty. He should become pure, completely purified of any infraction, that he can come to heaven as pure as a newborn child, without any sins whatsoever. This was the reason for his being sentenced to so severe a death penalty. Why was his wife sentenced to death? Why did she deserve a death penalty? After all, she was the wife of a tzaddik. She was a tzaddikus. She was pure. What did she do wrong? The Gemara says because his wife could have prevented him from doing this, saying this name of Hashem. Had she objected, she may have been able to stop him. In fact, she did not stop him. She is held guilty to a degree, and so, to a degree, she therefore gets a death penalty too, a little lighter vein. What about the daughter? How come that she has so bitter a lot to be sentenced to a house of illicit place where you have the the lowest type of Roman filth. To have to have contact with them, this kind of contact, what did he do to deserve so bitter a penalty? The Gemara answers, because one time she was walking in front of the Roman officers and she heard one of them say, look at the majestic walk of this girl. Look at how nicely she walks, what a step she has, remarking about her legs. And when she heard this, she began to walk with a more particular care, meaning to find more favor in their eyes. This, she was sentenced to so severe a penalty. This, the Gemara says, is a pasuk, Avayin Akeva Yisubeni, that there are certain sins that pertain to the feet for which people pay very heavily. These sins surround them and they come to the heavenly court. When it comes to the day of judgment, it is these sins that force the greatest penalty upon the people. What are these sins? For example, the Gemara says, a sin that people step on, which means a mitzvah people step on, they disregard, they ignore, is the mitzvah of tefillah. Tefillah mitzibur, davening with a minyan, davening on time, davening with a proper minyan. People who ignore the importance of this mitzvah, they actually step on it, those people will find that of all the sins they committed, this will be the top level crime with which they'll be charged. The highest penalty be paid for this kind of sin. That's why a person should know, in general, that if he wants to test himself, how am I doing as far as my religion, as far as my faith, as far as my allegiance to mitzvahs, to the tzaddik emes? First thing, the very first rule is, how am I doing with coming to the minyan? This is absolute, this is fact. How is my attendance at the minyan? Is it regular? Is it on time? I might be doing other things wrong, but I am still perfectly attached. I'm still there. I'm not stepping on the crowning mitzvah. The person sees that he's lax when it comes to the mitzvah of tefillah mitzibur. Davening with the minyan, his attendance is poor, lateness, he misses once or twice or a few times. He should know that he's being trapped. His feet are being dragged down into the lowest part of Tumor, and those feet are stepping and trampling on a major mitzvah. This was the reason, a similar case with the daughter of Hidimatadion that was punished so severely. The Gemara says that when these three were sentenced, given these sentences, then each one of them said a pasuk. Pasuk in the Torah of Tzidek Hadin, which means they accepted, they said, Hashem is Tzadik V'Yoshna, Hashem is righteous, I accept this, I deserve this. No complaints whatsoever, no qualms. There was no question in their mind that there was not justice meted out to them. Hashem is righteous and just, I deserve it, and I accept this. This was a statement by all three. And then we come to the details of each one in particular. It's important to note that Rabbi Hanina ben Tanyan was the father-in-law of Rabbi Meir Balanes, which is the next portion of this story. We should be zecher to fulfill every one of the mitzvahs in the Torah with the deepest respect, with the greatest intent, the strongest kavana, and with all the emunah that's possible within us. Emunah, the words of Hashem and the tzaddikim, and that's chus we should be zechut.